This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with Zelfin Fuzi, a theatre practitioner and the artistic director of Theatre Management Associates, Richard Chua, the editor of online TheatreX Asia, which provides information, news and reviews on the arts in Southeast Asia for a Chinese-speaking audience, and of course, Sharad Kutan, a producer at BFM. July was a relatively quiet month, since Ramadan fell during that period. But few performances occurred in the higher-profile venues. Interestingly, all three that we are going to look at today come from the Chinese-language-based performing companies. The first one we'll look at is a play titled Just Kidding by a group that's called Circus. It was held at DPAC in a black box, and it was in Chinese with English subtitles. Now, the play begins with the protagonist dreaming about a transfer student in her high school days who was nicknamed Ostrich. Ostrich tells the protagonist, "Please, you have to find my family and let them know about this. I am dead." Now, of course, this event took place some 20 years ago, when they met at school. Then the other schoolmates met up together, and then we slowly, bit by bit, find out what happened. Zelfin, you and Sharad saw this play.
Yes.
How did it grab you?
I think, I've been seeing a lot of Chinese productions that have been happening in the past year and a half and so on. I think, you know, for a Chinese production doing theatre, this is certainly one of the better ones. They were, you know, spent a lot of effort, you know, developing a lot of the elements of production, used a lot of elements of sound, set, staging, incorporating different entrances and exits, innovative ways of how to use the space. It's actually one of the best productions I've seen in terms of theatre, of using the space in the black box so well. You know, they put a lot of effort in costuming, maybe a bit too much in makeup, Sharad. They all looked very, very, very pretty for the characters and their roles in the show. But I thought it was a very good production in terms of trying to tie in all the different elements of a production together, for sure.
But and I agree with you about it was reasonably slick. It was very watchable. The actors and the acting was rather even, I think, across the board. And the story itself was interesting, right? Because there's a mystery element to it, and the question is, you know, what happened to this girl and who was responsible? And there is enough moral ambiguity, right? So in the sense that characters take on responsibility, they might not have been directly involved, but okay. So that the psychological dimension of the characters, I think, all were reasonably surfaced in the production. I mean, I was watching it, I was just thinking, wow, this is so TV. And I couldn't leave that thought. That dominated it. I mean, I do not understand Mandarin. My Mandarin is extraordinarily rudimentary, though I did learn it for a while. I relied on subtitles. And because of that, maybe I was misled. For instance, I thought it was located in Malaysia. I assumed that was it. And therefore, I also was puzzled by the costuming and the styling. They didn't seem particularly Malaysian. So when I turned to the people sitting next to me, I said, "Is this Japanese?" And then they said, "Well, no, maybe Taiwanese."
Because they were wearing sweaters and all of that.
Yeah, it's sweaters. I mean, we've got a Cameron Highlands school, kids do wear sweaters. But, you know, it's so.
but this was not Cameron Highlands.
It was more than that. It was the whole look. There was a particular kind of overly aestheticized, you know. It was slightly unreal.
Now, yeah. Richard, you're familiar with this theater group called Circus.
Yes.
Well, what's their history?
They used to study in Taiwan together. They were friends, and they studied in the university and established a theatre company called The Circus, Ma Xi Tuan. Ma Xi Tuan is actually circus, but Ma is also a reference to Malaysia. So basically, it's a theatre company that presents Malaysian drama, so to speak. Yeah. So they came together and they did productions in Taiwan. When they came back to Malaysia, what they did was they got together again. They wanted to relive the experience of doing theatre together, so they did one show. And it got an award for Best Original Screenplay in the Chinese Drama Award, and called Si Ju Jiang. Right? And this is the second production. Yeah.
You know, I think maybe I have to explain a little by my this idea that it's very TV. Because I think while they use the space well, they didn't use their bodies. They didn't use their bodies in a theatrical way. Mm. It was very speaking from the head,
yes.
And very posed.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, the whole production reminded me of that Hollywood movie, I Know What You Did Last Summer, or I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, this whodunit, you know, this murder which happened a long time ago, and then this ghost of this victim comes back and haunts them, and then they have to relive their experience of or their role in this murder, and are haunted by this ghost again.
If I hear you all correctly, you're saying in terms of the production values, in terms of watchability, it was all quite well done. Except that there's some issues as to it's too much like television. Why isn't this television as opposed to a stage production?
I think this is very it's a production decision that most theatre companies make, in that sense, so that the plot and also how the show is presented, the story, could be more accessible to the audience in one way or another. Or subconsciously, they're actually being influenced by TV and the way it's presented. Actually, for Just Kidding, is a bit different because it was staged in the four-sided theatre space, yeah, whereby actors are performing to four-sided audience.
Yeah, I think that perhaps this is what people are used to, and they can understand the language of theatre, of this kind of theatre, quite easily, right? Because it conforms with their experience or exposure to TV and film. But for people making it, the question I want to ask them is, why use theatre if you're going to do TV? Or, you know, why not just put it on YouTube, right? What is it about the live experience of this, the fact that, you know, we are sitting merely meters away from the actual bodies? What about all those considerations? So you have a medium and you're kind of ignoring its specificity. And it's very unfortunate, because I was reading at that point a little bit about early 20th century Russian theatre and the experiment. So I say, you know, is it because our theatre practitioners don't have manifestos? They don't talk about the purpose of theatre, you know, they don't think deeply about it.
I feel that the Chinese language theatre in Malaysia, there is a certain kind of sorting out of identity and also finding their own aesthetics currently happening. Like, for example, theatre companies would present much more spoken drama, which is a Chinese theatre thing in that sense.
What do you mean by a spoken drama?
In China, there is no such thing as drama. Drama is a Western
concept.
And when the Chinese came out with spoken drama, it's actually influenced by the Moscow Art Theatre. So that's why method acting and Stanislavskian kind of style came in. And then this is how Chinese theatre spoken drama actors are being trained. And they place a lot of emphasis on language. Therefore, if you know the language, you're able to know that there are different accents to Mandarin. The one that is very Beijing, and the other one is very Taiwan. And in Malaysia, the Malaysian Chinese has its own accent, but most of them are being educated in Taiwan, so they're kind of influenced by the Taiwanese cultural practice, aesthetics, and also the language. So my question is, when you choose the way to speak Mandarin, what is the purpose in that sense? You know, are you speaking the language that you are really comfortable in, or the something, or the language that you really like? Because all of them can do that.
This play, which was done in Mandarin, but they adopted the Mandarin of Taiwan as opposed to the Mandarin that's spoken in Malaysia.
Right from the start, you could see that the way they speak Mandarin, it's proper Chinese, but has a Taiwanese accent. But after a while, when you watch the show, you kind of realize it's because of the different levels of acting abilities of the actors, and you get to see some Malaysian-Chinese accent coming out. So that kind of complicates the space a little bit in that sense, because the show is actually very experimental. Yeah, because you put everybody in a void, and then everyone is just living in that space. Very, very Bakhtian, right? Very existential. But we are not exactly sure what that space is. So when an empty space happens, when they claim the space, and they put in all these different kind of things, including the costumes, which look very Japanese, because if you go to Taiwan, you know that Taiwan society is very influenced by the Japanese culture, you know, because of the history and all that. So we are picking different histories coming in into one theatre space. You find it difficult to sort that out. And also Malaysian Chinese has its own aesthetics as well.
It seems like, okay, first I feel I completely misread a lot of this. I missed the nuances that you mentioned just now. The question is dislocation. I mean, you know, when bodies are moving in space, they're moving in culture and time. And when you take them out of that and you kind of, you know, patch them together, what is it for the audience, actually? Do they look at it and think this is weird, or do they think, oh, this is what we should aspire to? You know, we should be speaking good Mandarin and such.
I think the world of the play has to be defined. I think that's a director's job to state very clearly where it is and then make those directorial decisions based on the setting and the world of the play. So those conventions have to be known to the director. I don't think you can place it in nothingness or voidness or in a vacuum. You know, everything that you do, then there's lots of implications. Because if you're doing like what you picked up on is the costume, you know, they were wearing sweaters and short plaited skirts. You know, this will then influence your decision on what this character is and where it is, what year it is, time, venue, place, setting, and all that. So you have to decide where and what the world of the play is to then take action upon it.
Is this an issue of theatre that is practiced in Malaysia when we are a multicultural society, but we're still trying to practice, let's say, with the English language theatre, do an American play or do a British play, and then we have English spoken in, I don't know, our Rojak way, and then the same thing is happening with the Chinese theatre. Is that, at the end of the day, the underlying issue?
It is something that we really need to think about. Like the what is problematic here is that the choice, the director made that choice to stage this play. What is his or her purpose in doing this particular production? And most of the time, there's a quite dangerous presumption that, you know, oh, as long as I speak in Mandarin, my audience members are Chinese, they will be able to understand it. In that sense, so there's a certain kind of assumption that, you know,
and that that's adequate.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, and then I'm presenting it to you. But again, if we go back to the more fundamental stage of communication, so you should assume that, you know, everyone comes as an empty slate and then to be able to absorb whatever things that you're taking. So I think that's why you see that Chinese theatre productions have a certain kind of, they feel that the audience knows what they want to speak about already and they move on to something else. And also why Chinese theatre productions are much more experimental and they try different things in that sense. Because there's a need to want to progress and to want to move on and then to do different things. But those basic things like, how do you go about communicating to an audience at the very basic and also right from the start? How should it be done? These are some things that need to be taken note of.
I don't think in this production it was very experimental. I think, in fact, it kind of worked within very
the narrow confines of television.
The confines, the conventions of television, you know, it wasn't experimental at all.
Sharad Kutan, Richard Chua, Zelfin Fusi, we're all talking about a play that we saw in July. Coming up, we'll look at two other productions by Chinese language performing arts group, Chatan Kulit, a dance drama by the company Noba Khan, led by Lee Sui Kyong, and Hirup Ini Senge by Orang Orang Drum Theatre. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with Zelfin Fusi from the Theatre Management Associates, Richard Chua from Theatrex Asia, and Sharad Kutan, also from BFM. I want to go back to the issue that, is this a fundamental problem because we don't have anything that's, in a sense, identifies us? Like, for instance, if it's done in Malay theatre, one would assume then that, you know, the language is the same, it's here.
Well, you know, no. I don't think that's true, actually.
No?
Even because any single language will have different registers, and registers will communicate class, gender, or regional differences, you know, coming from north of the peninsula and whatever.
But at least it's clear it's here, though, you know?
Well, yeah, with the English language theatre that I'm most familiar with, I think there's always this anxiety about how to speak English. There's always this anxiety about being inauthentic. And English theatre people are constantly looking to other languages to establish their authenticity, especially Malay. But I don't think that solves the problem, partly because I think we have to come to terms with the fact that English is the local language, and it's the English's spoken, the many types of varieties of English spoken in the peninsula and in Borneo that we need to express in our theatre. We don't have to speak Malay to be Malaysian. But having said that, I think
we have to move away from language for a moment and to look at something else. Like, for example, as I travel around Malaysia and all that, we get to see a lot of things that defines what is Malaysian. Like, for example, food is one area that people usually use to identify Malaysia with, in that sense, like how the way you cook it and all that, and also the culture and how the people relate to each other, and also how, you know, they come together to create different things.
Richard, I want to pick up something that you mentioned when we went to see Chattan Kulit, which is Swee Kyung's. You said that, you know, you were very impressed with this group because it was using a language of dance, but it's informed by the Malaysian body.
Yes.
That sounded interesting to me, but I wasn't quite sure what you meant by that.
When we use language, it is very easy that we kind of put on a label and identify that English, Mandarin, Malay, and others. But when you come to use the language of dance, we are basically just using body movement. So if you look at the body in itself, like for example, Swee Kyung, right, the artistic director of Nubakan, he's Malaysian Chinese, and he uses his body, which is influenced by Buto, from his Buto training, and also other things like yoga and all that. And he created something uniquely that is from his own culture, being a Malaysian Chinese in Malaysia. So in Nubakan's work, you would be able to see things like some very clear Malaysian kind of motif. Like, for example, Chinese wedding, the headdress, or the colours, you know, the red colour sashes and stuff like that. So, and also high heel shoes, which is very, very urban in that sense. Now, if you look at it from a very Buto kind of a tradition, then
it's not there.
It's not there. It's like, how could you do that? You know, the fragile body should be just like that, you know. And they painted themselves white to show that, you know, how fragile the body is, and then from there there's a kind of revolution going on within the body against the system. But that's Japan, you see. But what Swee Kyung has done is that he basically brought that spirit back here in Malaysia, and in his own little way to revolt against this whole multicultural system. And within it, he actually created something very Malaysian, and through the body. So actually, when you see Swee Kyung and his dancers, you know that they are Malaysians doing Buto, right? But they are not exactly doing Buto. The Buto train, but the body has become something else. That was like the first phase. Then after that, Swee Kyung went on to do other stuff, very Southeast Asian, like for example, Chattan Kulit. Although it's based on a Chinese story about a ghost who actually came out of love, you know, and she used a human skin to hide herself and so that she could get the man that she wants.
But in this context, he used the Bali masks.
Yes. There's an attempt to bring on an intercultural exchange using the form of mask work and also body and dance.
Yeah. So this always throws us back to certain problems, right, of borrowing. How we borrow, what do we borrow? Do we borrow the surfaces, or do we take the deeper philosophies that inform it? I'm particularly concerned to not use the word Malaysian when we talk about these innovations, because maybe in Swee Kyung's case, and I have seen very little of his work, I saw some early work many years ago, it's very idiosyncratic. So I think of it as actually Swee Kyung. It's not Malaysian.
Yes.
You know, and that's not a problem.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that when an artist comes to do a piece of work, it's this very personal thing, and also as an individual. So he borrows stuff from Buto, and also he's applying those things there. I feel that to me, this kind of borrowing is actually getting another structure, and then you apply that structure in to help you to do your work in that sense. And as a writer and reviewer, then I think my attempt to be a good audience is to see how we could sort things out and then try to make sense of it. For me, as an observer, I think there is something interesting there. I am unable to really pinpoint something there as yet, but I could see something distinct, very Malaysian, which is coming from here, this cultural site. And when he travels out to other countries like Macau and other places, when I speak to my colleagues there, fellow theatre writers and reviewers, then they'll say that, oh, this is very Malaysian. I say, what does that mean? And I say that it's difficult to explain what's Malaysian because it's very complex, but there's something there.
We are all trying to, in a way, identify what's Malaysian. Sometimes I feel we're a bit confused by our own identities in that we have this Chinese play that's called
Kidding.
Just kidding. The title is in English. And then we have Swee Kyung's dance, but it's titled in Malay, although there's no language spoken throughout the whole production. And then we have another one called Hidup Ini Senge from a Chinese group, performed in Chinese but with English subtitles, but the title is in Malay. Is this, in a way, a reflection of our struggling to find something that we say we are Malaysians and we are Malaysian theatre practitioners? Is that at the heart of all of this also?
Very quick, Richard, I like the phrase you use, you know. You use the phrase, it's from here, and I think that's probably good enough.
Yeah.
Because when we say it's here, or you say it's local, you don't have to call it Malaysian. It could be, local could be Southeast Asia.
I agree, yeah.
You know, and that's probably all we need to say, because what is not local is then the issue. We are borrowing from something that is outside, that comes from a different context or a different time, and we need to, and this has often been the criticism of Southeast Asian borrowings, that it's always taken the aesthetic and left the philosophy aside. And somebody called Sultan Takdir Al-Shibana, Indonesian cultural critic and intellectual, who said this of Southeast Asia, but over the eons. Yes. Yeah, but I think it's still true. It's a lot of borrowing on the aesthetic level.
Operating in Southeast Asia is always a challenge because of translation problems, and also there are so many languages going on, and its complexities, cultural practices, and all that, to see.
Well, there are no rules in art. It's about making it your own. And, you know, an artist has their own personal journey. And in their artistic career, in their life, they visit places, they work with other people, they are trained in certain ways, and they make it their own. And I think you see it in all art forms, whether in literature, whether on TV or film or visual art or sculpture or poetry, anything. And I think it's all about, it's from here, and it's your own personal experience and making the best of your experiences.
So what,
and bringing
but what
that
is being
work.
Said by, you know, a group of people performing in one language, yet the title is in another language, and having subtitles on top of that?
I think that's fine.
I think it's fine, but what does it say? We're trying to be inclusive or what?
Every Malaysian body has got different cultures flowing in them, and I think one way or another, there are many languages. They will be able to understand many different languages, but not deeply, but at least you know that there's a certain kind of access to it.
It might be the
negotiation of the races in the performing arts or what?
But you know, not so banal. I think there is there are words that are come to be used by, and I'm told, by Chinese Malaysians that are actually of Malay provenance, but who they even forgotten that it's Malay, you know, but it's become part of the thing. And sometimes maybe the word kulit has nuances, or it has associations that are more powerful than maybe the literal Chinese word for it. So yeah, it could be many reasons. Yeah. The kind of tokenistic, I'm going to have a Malay title to make myself sound local. It might be actually deeper than that.
Oh, Sri Kong said he had it first translated into English, and a painted skin didn't sound so. No,
sophisticated.
Evocative. And that's it. And that's good enough. That's good enough reason to have that word there.
Talking about Hidup Ini Sengit, Zelfin, you saw it.
I did. I saw it. It's the first time I've seen a production by this group called...
Yes, it's your inaugural production. Orang Orang Drum Theatre.
Orang Orang Drum Theatre. You know, they were very... enthusiastic, very well performed. I thought the lead actor, his name is
Boys. A couple of them are from Hands Percussion.
Percussion. So you can obviously see the training that has gone into that. You know, a great performer, very watchable. I have to say, Boys, it really held a strong performance throughout the entire production. Whenever I go into see a show, I always wonder, you know, what is the story behind this? You know, what is the story? Because, you know, this wasn't a so-called music piece. It was a multidisciplinary piece. There was music, there was dance, there was spoken
huge
word,
puppet.
There was theater, there was puppetry, right? This man or woman on stilts, you know, and playing with different, you know, styles. So for me, I was always trying to find out what was the story. I'm still not sure actually what it is, but obviously there's a theme that's running throughout. You know, people who are maybe, you know, downtrodden,
marginalized, screaming and shouting, and no one hearing,
fighting, resisting, revolting, all this done with music and dance and voice, right? So you know, I'm not sure what it is, but maybe I kind of picked up on some subtext, maybe some, you know, subversive political statement there. Maybe that character on stilts was some politician, so-called, and they were trying to fight back. And then with the shredding of the newspapers, they had newspapers strewn all over the stage. You know, everyone came out and started tearing it up, you know, trying to say something about media or need to cover
useless media.
Useless media, perhaps, you know. You know, and trying to fight back on that. I'm not sure what the rest of the what you guys thought or what the audience thought.
You found it engaging?
I found it interesting to watch the physicality of the performances. I think there were some really nice pieces, I think, from the lead actor. I think also from this lady in the red cloth.
I really love that. Different images that she conjured up, one of which came to mind when I saw it. This is from the Japanese anime, Spirited Away.
Yeah, that was a really nice piece, actually. Probably one of the best pieces in the whole performance. But I thought it was quite watchable.
Well, I didn't watch it, and I missed it to my utter regret. But the idea of physical elements or the physicality of plays, I think that's really wonderful. Partly because I think in Malaysia we don't have enough of that at certain levels, you know, especially in English theatre. You know, just people just don't use their bodies like that. Maybe it's because we lack training.
Naturalism.
It's not even natural. Even if it's a naturalistic thing, you would use your body. I mean, you know, it's like people are not moving naturally. They're not, you know.
No.
And that's, that's a shame.
There's two clear delineation among theatre, music, dance. Like, you know, movement, body is the dance thing, so it's not very theatre in that sense. But actually, if you look at theatre in itself, it's an experience and it's a space and anything can happen. And since you're a human being performing on stage, then your body will definitely come into play, and it's a very important element. You know, like for example, in our daily life, we actually talk about non-verbal communication, right? Your body language and all that. So I don't see that as a problem, but hasn't been used as much as it should be.
Well, I think we are run out of time. We've kind of, in essence, we've talked about the Chinese language theater and what it is going through, and in terms of how it's also negotiating. I think from that perspective, I see all arts group negotiating, just that some are doing it more overtly, some just kind of ignore the whole question altogether. Well, thank you guys. Zelfin Fuzi from Theatre Management Associates, Richard Chua from Theatrex Asia, an regional online arts magazine, Sharad Kutan, producer BFM. This is Front Row and the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.